Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Coach, and welcome to episode 228 of Instructional Coaching with Miss B. Today, I am talking to my guest, Dr. Joe Lane, about how to talk so teachers actually hear you. We want to provide better feedback to teachers and make sure that our messages are received and that they create response and reflection. This is a part of the Better Coaching Conversations mini-series that we've been working on for the last few weeks. Last week, we talked about breaking through resistance with difficult conversations. We've talked about how to track your coaching work in conversations. And today we're thinking a little bit about feedback, how we can make our feedback sound like something teachers want to hear. Not that it's always going to be roses, a bed of roses, but the reality is that people have to be ready to listen to you, what you have to say. We want to think a little bit about different coaching personas and how they receive feedback and what the research says about feedback, because sometimes we're basing things on our gut, but that's not really what research tells us. So because of all those things, I'm excited to welcome my guest, Dr. Joe Lane. She has been doing so much research on this, and I think she's going to have a lot of great information to share. Of course, if you're needing some support in working with a resistant teacher, you can head to buzzingwithmissb.com/resistant, and you will actually get a free mini course sent to your inbox that will walk you through how to support a teacher who is resistant to your feedback and not interested in working with you. That's a free email course, and I think you're going to love it. But let's go ahead and welcome our guest. So let's welcome Joe to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And I know people would like to get to know you a little bit. So as a quick way to introduce yourself, if you could share about a few things, I think that'll help us get to know you. Who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
So I help school leaders. And also I help aspiring school leaders. So I lovingly call myself the queen of the pipeline, because my work involves supervising three different emerging leaders programs for my system. I'm in Tulsa Public Schools. And I also coach administrators in their first couple of years of being in their role, whether that's principal or assistant principal. So I work with school leaders who work their tails off every day and deserve so much more than our systems give them.
Awesome. And then my next question is, I have sort of a passion project, I guess, this year that I'm sharing with people. I think we don't have enough hobbies. I think that we spend all of our time thinking about work and then we get absolutely nothing left over for ourselves. So what is a hobby that you love to do?
I am an international backgammon player.
Oh, wow.
Which is an obscure hobby. I like to call it a sport. I mean, people get to travel for sports all the time, and it takes just as much training as any other sport. But I play backgammon, and I travel all over the world with my dad, and we play in tournaments, and it's a great applied mathematics. It's great.
That is so neat. I love that. What an exciting thing to do, and to be able to travel with your dad, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So I'm going to ask you today, we're talking about the feedback we provide to teachers, how we can make it better, how we can make it to where we are providing teachers with something that they actually go, maybe I should like listen to this and think about it a little bit. And so it's part of a mini series that we're doing about better coaching conversations. So what I would like to know to start is, what does research say about the feedback that we provide to teachers?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I, in true doctor fashion, I brought my sources.
Good. That's what I asked for. So perfect.
Yes. And, you know, it's hard to distill it into like a couple of bite-sized sound bites, but I'm gonna say a couple of things. Feedback is your friend. I think we always say that feedback is a gift, but it's not just a gift in terms of improving someone's performance, which it does. It improves performance at a 12.5% or something. But it also has a lot of other potential impacts that I think people don't all often think about. Like, for example, the connection between feedback and engagement. So, 80% of employees who receive weekly feedback are considered fully engaged, which means that they're more engaged at work because of the feedback that they received. And of course, there's a connection between employee engagement and retention. So, while I think some believe that feedback could drive people away, which is a common misconception, right? If I give them feedback, they'll run. It's quite the opposite, that with feedback, we get more engagement, more participation, more opportunities for career advancement, and just better future focus orientation. We get less stuck in the weeds around problems and we move to solutions. It just orients us better towards improvement, which is ultimately what we need to do. Like, that's literally the business we're in. We need to do it.
That's interesting. And I wonder, does it just feedback at all, regardless of the quality or the type, 80% of
Ah, that's, I think, an important
that's what
point,
I'm
right?
asking. Yeah.
Yeah, like people suck at feedback. Like,
Right.
suck at it.
Yes.
And it's not because they don't want to, it's just that they have to get over their own egos and how that feels to them. And of course, there are sometimes implications for relationships and also thinking about crossing lines of difference and how things might land, and which is why people of color receive just less feedback in general, which of course impacts their career advancement and their opportunities because we're afraid to give feedback. So we actually are holding our staff back. And especially if we're trying to develop a more diverse workforce that is representative of our students, it to me, this is a civil obligation to improve our society, like to improve our systems. We have to give feedback to make it a more equitable and just system.
Yeah. So what does better feedback sound like? What does it sound like if we're doing it well?
So it's specific, really specific. And I mean, as much as someone loves to hear good job, that doesn't actually change the way we orient ourselves towards our work. It has to be really, really specific and timely. And format matters a lot, both in terms of whether it's face to face or written, but also sort of the structure in which we follow because. I have been pushed on this recently, actually. I have always prescribed to the like quantitative is better, because it takes your opinion out of it. It just allows you to get concrete in what the evidence is supporting. But actually, evidence says that we need a combination. We also need to say, hey, I've noticed this thing about you that is really strong and really important to your work. And yeah, like numbers can tell a story, and that's important for how we orient our feedback generally, because we don't really care about personal preferences. Like personal preferences actually need to be out of our feedback. Like, do not begin feedback with, I love how you. Like, cut it out. No more of that. We say it was effective when. And then we can name exactly those moves. Those preferences matter none when we have to consider the impact.
Yeah. So then, in terms of like structure, what kind of format and structure is what you've shared a little bit
Yeah,
about, right?
I got two. And
Okay.
I got two. And I think there are important distinctions here, the difference between feedback and coaching. So the feedback structure that I generally prescribe to is something that I learned from CT3. This is not my idea. It is called AIC, Affirm, Impact, Challenge, which is, so an example might be, today I saw you cold call three students. As a result, you had 15% more hands up after you did that cold call, right? So you name the move, you name the impact that it had, And they say, next time try doing that cold call a little bit earlier in the lesson so they feel on the hook, right? So you give them some sort of concrete challenge that will, and it doesn't need to be connected to your firm. It could be totally separate from based on the evidence that you collect, but a firm impact challenge.
Does the challenge work better if it's a statement or is it a question? Does the question work just as well? Like, what do you think would happen if you tried this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it really depends on who you're talking to. So I use a framework called situational leadership. Many coaches are quite familiar, skill wheel matrix, right? It's a skill wheel matrix. So for people who are new, asking a question just makes them feel stupid. Like
Yeah, if they
just
knew,
tell
they would
them.
be like, yeah, they it's yeah, yeah, I get it. They don't have the framework.
And people that are more experienced who have the schema to pull from, you can absolutely ask a question and get to the same outcome. The question that is always happens from there is how accountability works, right? If you ask a question and you weren't clear about what you expect from someone, it is really hard to really close the loop accountability wise. But you can do that with really strong relationships, right? Like there's lots of ways to hold people accountable besides just, I told you something, I expect you to do it, right? Like it can't, that can show up with like, hey, I asked you about that. How'd that go? You know?
Yeah, I'm thinking about a teacher that is like especially efficacious that will look at something and think, oh yeah, I bet it. Like I remember once I asked a question, I said, what do you think would happen or what how do you feel about putting these in notebooks? What do you think would happen if you put this into their notebook and use it, as a reference? And I remember I left that note on the teacher's desk and I was walking by like 2 hours later and the teacher's sitting there reading her note. And she shouts at me down the hallway, I never thought of doing that. That's such a good idea. Why did I never think of that? And I just and it was like, oh, wow, you read my note. Like you were, I just left you a little note with everything was, like I did lots of affirming. Like, I used actually a very similar structure. And then I asked that question and that was like the challenge. Like, what, how could you use your notebook that would support this? And it was just such a funny, I don't know, it really stuck with me because some teachers are going to take those things and they're going to say, oh, I could do that. That's true. Because we just sometimes, some of us just need to think about something in a different way. But a lot of people,
Nuts.
yeah, exactly. And a lot of teachers I have found don't, they need more than that, like you're saying, especially our new teachers, but not only our new teachers. They need more specific, direct, well, this would be a good opportunity to do this, or, I mean, something like really specific instead of just like, well, what could happen? Or, I feel like sometimes we rely on the questions because it feels less pointed and it feels less like you're being an aggressor. I feel like we have this idea sometimes of the feedback that we provide, but then it can be very easy to say, well, I'm just not going to do that. And I have no interest in, I don't care what would happen if I tried
Yeah, they could
that.
opt out. Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's a really good point, and I was curious about that.
And we're putting a lot of resources into coaching structures, right? Like we spend a lot of money on coaching
Yes.
in systems. And I consistently question whether that investment is worth it. I'm a coach, right? And I consistently ask the question whether that investment is worth it. And I believe there are kind of a couple of reasons why coaching often fails is we do shy away from being really direct and clear with folks and being a person that can hold people accountable through influence and not authority. And that is possible to do. And
And
the
that's where we
other
have to
thing,
come from. We have no like technical power. The any kind of power that we have is derived from relationships and influence and sort of implied, like this is the way that we work together. But then you have to believe that to start with and carry yourself in that way.
And the challenge also is that if we think about performance management broadly, like just kind of zoom way out, generally we follow a cycle. We set expectations first, then we give feedback, and then we close loops with coaching, right? So like we're all gonna do turn and talks. Let's do some PD on turn and talks. And then we go to classrooms and you're like, hey, bro, Don't forget about Turnitox. Talks. And
Right.
you remember that thing about Turnitox? Talks? That's when you can write it in an AIC format, right?
Yes.
Hey, I noticed that you made an attempt. Here's, quick push on how to make Turnitox talks better. You should assign them each a role. Or how about try sentence stems or whatever. Like refine the already stated expectations. And then this is where coaching, I think, is really important because coaching is different than feedback because we are closing gaps and we're interrogating gaps, right? Like, what is the barrier for why this is not working for you? And then we practice the crap out of it, right? So, like, what makes coaching different is the practice.
Right.
I
So
love
you're
practice.
telling somebody something to do. You are helping them figure out how to do it and trying it out.
And trying it
And
out.
yes, and I think that some coaching practices kind of look like I just visit all the classrooms and leave feedback, which whenever I started coaching, that was sort of the model. The school didn't have anything in place at all. So it was like
You're
creating
making
a
it up.
coaching. Yeah, it was like building this plane while I was flying it, right? So like I did do a lot of that at first because I was trying to figure out how to support a school that had no history of coaching whenever I had not had any training. It was one of those situations they pluck a strong teacher out of the classroom and stick them in a coaching role without any support. So that was, I mean, way back when.
That's on brand.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens all the time, right? And probably a lot of the people listening right now have had that same experience. But it's you, whenever you're just trying to figure out what to do, that's whenever we rely on just stuff that we just think might work. And then that's whenever we don't have a strong program, but actually meet needs of teachers in different ways.
I think there's one other misconception that's really important here because, you can probably figure out from the way that I'm talking that I do not shy away from being direct, right? About both the expectations in the school, about what we expect instructionally. That is literally our job as school leaders is to reduce variability across classrooms, right? That is our job. And so I do not shy away from setting really clear instructional expectations. And I think there is a misunderstanding that when we are direct, that it squashes people's autonomy or squashes people's like innovation. And actually research says otherwise, that feedback actually generates 20% more creative solutions. Like we even in high Fidel a high fidelity culture, right? A high fidelity culture, you could still provide feedback that feedback to that outcome, right? What if that's say a tier one curriculum that you're executing, it actually makes people more adaptable to their learners, even in high fidelity cultures. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions about being direct and it actually making it people feel bad. It actually is the opposite, right? Like it makes people feel safe because they know where you stand and what to do. And then we kind of wrestle around with like, how does this make sense for you as a person and as a educator, but here's how to do
Personalized.
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that that is part of the issue is that we feel like, or people often feel like, that they're kind of like watering things down or making things more palatable, but then things become unclear. And whenever we have a lack of clarity, that's whenever we have lots of issues. That's whenever you have huge morale issues, in my experience, is whenever there is not clarity from every level, like from admin and from coaches. And then you get into classrooms and you hear, I mean, all the little things people talk about of, oh, well, they're not, we're not, I'm not going to do that. They're making you do that. And why are they, and whenever the expectation has been set for everybody, everybody knows what the expectation is. Whenever it is different or unclear, or one person can go and say, I don't really want to do that. And the principal says, that's fine, you don't have to, which happens a lot.
It does.
Yeah. Then I feel
It
like that
does.
is whenever
And
we have
coaches
so
do
much
it
bigger
too.
problems.
Like coaches do it too. Like I ain't gonna snitch on you, right? I said that this week. Like it's easy to if you don't align with the directives to create a subversive learning culture, like especially as people are have more and more access to educational research, and we have people in power making decisions that don't always align to that research, Yeah, we create a lot of hey, I won't tell you if you don't tell, right? Because we have to do what's right for our children first and foremost. And sometimes our systems aren't caught up
Absolutely.
to the expertise of educators who are in there with children every day, right? Like coaches are just there to support. Like the experts are the teachers, period. And need to be treated as such.
Yeah, it is difficult when decisions are not being made at campus levels as well, whenever it's people that are
Work for a system. Like
unfamiliar.
I am the
Absolutely.
system.
Systems
Like,
are humans. It's just a collection of humans. So all the problems that humans have, a school will have. Like all the problems humans have, any level of a system will have. So yeah, it can be very difficult. So you mentioned that you're working on a book about seven different coaching personas. So if you could share a little bit about those different personas, I think that would be really interesting for us to hear.
Coaching can look lots of different ways. I think we've already talked about that, right? I'm a disciple of all of the coaching people, right? And from Bamrix Santoyo to Jim Nye to Elena Aguilar and all the things. And I found myself in the field having to do a lot of pivoting because, oh, this situation came up, oh, like I really need to talk about this. And when you're really trained, it's difficult to feel like you can pivot with people. And so like we pers end up prescribing to these okay, I didn't check that box yet, so hold on, hold on, hold on. I want to talk about that, but hold on, I haven't hit that box yet, right? And it becomes robotic and inhuman. And if we are as coaches are getting outcomes through influence, then we better be freaking good at influence, right? And responding to people. And it hit me one day when one of my school leaders that I was working with recently had a pretty significant setback. She had worked her career through the system, got into a school leader position, and then got demoted. And I sat across from her and I said, "Who do you need me to be right now?" And like she kind of sat back in her chair and she was like, "I don't know." But it was one of those moments where I was like, "This is what coaching is." Like coaching is a totality of needs. Like we are coaching humans. We are not coaching instruction only.
That's right.
These are humans. And I recognize that a huge, huge gap in our system is the way that we think. We feel really disempowered by things that happen to us. It just kind of washes over us like we're supposed to accept the system, right? And don't feel like we know how to navigate things well. And that takes complex work. And so the personas were kind of born out of some of those experiences of just needing to just be present for people instead of driving towards outcomes all the time. But we got to drive towards outcomes. Like our kids can't read.
It's like
Like
this
we got,
constant
so
yeah
like how you do that, right?
yeah
So I've designed these seven personas. One persona kind of sits on its own, and that is the first responder. First responder, that happens in states of emergency. Our goal is safety. But then we have the rest of them are divided into two different categories. Category one is the fixed category, which is like kind of what you consider your traditional coaching. Like you identify a problem, you build some knowledge about that problem, and you build some skill about that problem, right? So that's our consultant, our professor, and our coach. Okay, those are all fixed ones. I think we can all connect to that, identify with those.
Right, have an idea of what those could be like.
But then we got this relief side of the house. That's how the rest of them are kind of relief things. So And I say that, like, what does the teacher need? Does the
Mm-hmm.
teacher need a fix, or does the teacher need a relief? And I say teacher, it could be client, right? For me, it's school leaders. So
Yeah.
thinking in the same. So relief would be, like a buddy, like I just need you to like sit and joke with me for a second. Being a parent, like I'm gonna give you some tough love and tell you how it is, and provide some wisdom. Or I can be a therapist and I can unpack some thinking patterns that might be holding you back, right? So this allows for coaches to have a lot more fluidity. But again, it leads to the question, like, how are we going to continue to drive towards outcomes? Like, we can't just be in our feelings all the time.
Right. Being like, if we're a buddy, I mean, it would be real easy just to be like, oh, and buddy, buddy, and then that's it. And then you just let it go, right? And then nothing comes of that necessarily.
Like, we love those front office conversations that, like, are cute and interesting, but me talking about your coffee is not going to mean crap for children, right?
But they're also a part of like interacting with a human.
With a human,
Yeah,
right?
because
Who
they're human.
wants to feel connected
Yes, yes.
and loved and supported as a whole human, not just part of a system that will eat them up and chew them out. And I mean, I've coached almost 300 novice educators. Like, I've seen what our system does to them. And we're handling a lot of stuff. We are like, public schools are the symptom of a sick society. And that is hard to reckon with, especially if you are a person that believes that our public schools are designed for all children, right? Like, that's hard to reckon with. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. 90 some percent of my graduating class went to a 4-year university. Like, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know.
What the issues with schools were.
And
The
then when I got
repercussions of
in,
that.
I needed someone to help me. Like, I didn't know. And I think a lot of educators who hear like the call to teach, and God, thank God for all of them. Every one of them who walks through our doors who says, yeah, I'll do it. Like, we need to care with them for them, just like we care for every student that walks through our doors. Because they're dealing with a lot of stuff and trying to reckon with their personal identity in a system that makes no sense. And that takes support that coaches can provide that often feels outside of instruction.
But it's just navigating, it's dealing with the job in
And
whatever way.
it shows up in instruction, right? Even something like the teacher that snaps at a child, right? That's a manifestation of a disempowered mindset. It is not anything else but that. And if we cannot judge our educators for those moments, we have to help them through those moments. And we have to believe in our people first. Like, that's baseline. But anyways, those are the seven personas. And I believe that the book is meant to allow people to be nimble while still focusing on their outcomes and feel confident in those pivots.
So then, if we have an understanding of these personas, then we're kind of identifying, okay, in this moment, this is who I need to be for this person. And that gives us a guide on what kinds of things we are responding with, like what we are doing in that role, what we're saying, what we're listening for, I'm guessing. So then, how can we use an understanding of these different personas to help us provide feedback to teachers? Like, 'cause like you said, sometimes they're in the place where they are saying, I need some help with this. I want to figure this out. Sometimes they're saying, no, I just want to vent, which I am not it just that I am not that person who just complains. If I'm complaining, I want a solution. So it's been a real adjustment to me to understand that some people do sincerely just want to complain for no to get anywhere. I did not get any. I don't know. That's a very strange thing to me, but
I
that's
know, it's confusing to me too. I'm
okay.
like, and
Yeah.
what's the next
Yeah,
step,
I know. So then are we just gonna do this again tomorrow? Because nothing's gonna change, guys. Like
can
it's
admire the problem if you want, but
Yeah, it confuses me, but I know people like that. So then some do. So then what, how does this help us respond in those situations? How do we help this? Like you said, how do we get to the change and growth part and not just get stuck in the commiserating part?
Well, one, I think it really does take careful planning on the coach's part. Just like planning is necessary for a traditional coaching conversation in which you're practicing an action step, planning is also equally as important for planning relief conversations, meaning that you have to do the pre-work of identifying what are the gaps. And I have a framework around this idea around empowered mindsets and disempowered mindsets and how to spot them. And really how to get to the root cause. And there's three kind of variables, and that's how people think about their identity, their skills, and their value. Value meaning like superiority, inferiority, how they show up in that space organizationally. And so it you have to do the pre-work of identifying is the reason why this person is struggling or stuck or behaving in this way connected to one of those three things. And that analysis allows you to be much more nimble in moments where they say, hey, I need this help with something. You can reinforce some of these patterns of thinking that ultimately change behavior over time. Now, you cannot expect to like turn a light switch on in a single conversation. Like you cannot like, although it is possible. Like I was mindset coached when I was a beginning teacher, and my roommate, I was complaining about my sixth graders, and my roommate just said, Joe, they're 11. And that was it. That's all I needed.
Yes.
All I needed. I'm like, you're right. I'm getting eaten by 11-year-olds. You're correct.
But there's a lot of them, okay?
There's a lot of them. And have you met
Yeah.
them?
No, I don't think they are 11. Something's up.
But sometimes it's like, we all get stuff in our teeth. Like, I love a good everything bagel. Love a good everything bagel. You know how many poppy seeds I get stuck in my teeth?
Right.
Someone's got to be like, hey, listen, you're thinking about this wrong.
Yeah, give a different perspective. Yeah.
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 Like, even like I'm a trained coach. I know when my brain starts to do weird things.
Right.
And sometimes someone just has to say it to you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we get stuck in our bubble. I think that is very common. It's normal. It's very human. And I think we really get stuck in our bubble when we're a teacher in the classroom because you're literally in a bubble with a bunch of kids all day and you don't hardly come out at all. And then you don't see other people teach and you don't go to other classrooms if, unless schools have systems for that, which they should, but many do not. You know, that's the issue. I think that's the biggest disservice we do for teachers is we stick them in a room, say, good luck with that. We'll tell you what you need to do, but we won't really show you how to do it. And then, you know, we'll let you know if you did it at the end of the year. And they don't communicate, they don't collaborate, they don't see other people teach. People don't see them teach. We don't see the thing in action. It's such a weird way for somebody to learn how to do something. Somebody who's new at something, you just say, okay, hopefully you learned it all in college. And that is just such, that's just such a mistake. And that is why we keep having the same problems over and over again. We're like an octopus is super smart, but it can't pass the learning on to another octopus because I mean they can only do it like one generation because they can't write it down. So their grandchildren can't learn from grandpa, right? Because they can't write. We can't like we can help people see each other do these things, and we can share information, you know, from the teacher who's been teaching for 30 years. We have access to these things, but we don't take advantage of them.
Exactly. I'm so glad you said this. Like we know the answer. Like at this point, we have a science of reading. We have the data. We know what it's going to take. Like, I don't believe we've always had that. Like, we haven't even had the answer before.
Yeah, people just figure stuff out.
We
Draw
just
some
like kind of
conclusions.
guessed at stuff and
Yeah.
like, oh, let's put some books in front of them and like
Yeah.
strike some stuff.
Yeah.
And we had
We had
educational
pieces.
research that was kind of like helping us click along in our understanding of
Right.
what is it going to take to have all kids learn. And I think we've gotten to a place where we at least know the what. We have that part. But we what we're missing is several underlying beliefs, right? Like one, all of our children can learn. Like, let's go baseline there, right? Not all people believe that. Like, can you believe that? Not all people believe in all kids.
That's very true.
And so if we don't tackle pa patterns of thinking, if we don't interrogate how people's identities are interacting with an organization, like we are letting those beliefs continue to fuel a system that was designed for only certain groups of children. And so belief has to be part of our discussion. And we do need to build technical skills, though. We have, in my system, 56% of our teachers are novice. Like, we have to build technical skills, but if we don't tackle beliefs and patterns of thinking, we'll just continue to fuel a system that is not working.
So the feedback that you provide around beliefs, do you ever, like, if thinking about providing another perspective or another way of thinking about something, do you ever in the moment go, I don't even know what to say at this moment. Are you ever like stuck with, because I know certainly even just in friendship relationships, but certainly coaching, you're like, I know that this is not the way to be approaching this right now, but I do not have the words to tell you the thing. Like, I cannot figure out this one thing that you need to hear right now.
Yeah, which is why the pre-planning is so important, right? Like you ha it which can feel weird, especially when we're talking about guessing almost
Right.
about
You're not
ways
having
that
to
someone
other
else is
things.
thinking. Like it's hard to synthesize evidence, which is why having an understanding of behavioral cues can help coaches to identify like, oh, this is a mindset thing. Like, so I have three different sort of profiles of behavior that help people identify, okay, I gotta go mindset here. Like, I gotta go thinking patterns. And that's overcompensation. Oh man, I'm an open overcompensator. Oh, I'm an overcompensator. But overcompensating. So that could look like snapping at a kid. That could look like spending a lot of time on your football coaching, but not on your instruction. It could look like those really incredible bulletin boards
Okay,
with no lesson plans, right? Like, so overcompensation. There's detaching, which is just like they're there, they're going through the motions, but they're not necessarily like in it.
invested.
And then there's surrendering. So that could be like, the teacher that straight out ignores the behavior, or the teacher that gave up on lesson plans 4 months ago and hoping that no one notices, right? Those types of behaviors. And so when you see overcompensating, detaching, or surrendering, that's the cue, ping, to the coach. I got a mindset here. So because it's easy to get into really technical work only, because that's the most immediate thing. That's the thing that's right in front of us. That's the thing that's impacting kids right now, right? But
But
we
then that
won't
could be like
change
a surface.
systems if we're just technical problem, like technical problem after technical problem, will not change our system.
If
We
there's like a
have to get adaptive.
if it's like a management issue and we're saying try this, try that, but they have a fundamental belief that it's creating the situations in their classroom, then we're not addressing that fundamental belief by saying try this, try that.
Correct, correct. And actually, I'm glad you brought up that particular thing because that's often a big mistake that coaches make regarding modeling as well. That sometimes, if we step in as coaches to model instruction, we can actually be reinforcing really negative mindsets about kids. And so there's like a little bit of nuance in when and how and in what context we would model as opposed to co-teaching, as opposed to live coaching, right? In cases of turnaround. I'm a trained turnaround coach. That's what got me into coaching, really.
Okay.
That was the hook. When the first time I turn around a classroom, oh, it was over for me. Like, I was like, this is what I'm doing the rest of my life. Like, I have to coach the rest of my life because there is nothing more exciting that when you can have a 20, 30 minute conversation with a teacher and it absolutely changes things for 25 kids. Oh, it's amazing. And I was like, I gotta keep chasing that. So I have been chasing that feeling for 15 years. Yeah.
Can you share more about when you have found it effective to model, when you have effective, when do you choose the different kind of coaching strategy? Which one do you think is relevant in different situations?
Yeah, two variables to consider here. Variable one is teacher belief in self. So is there confidence in the toilet? Is it, or are they, do they believe that they have the ability to actually like change things? And teacher belief in students. And those two variables, of course, I had to put it on a matrix. Influence, whether it's like more hands-on present, or whether you kind of take a step back and empower the teacher to take some risk with your support. I have found one of my favorites is to have teachers kind of do their thing, hang in the back, adjust, like take kids out that might need to just like be removed from that situation to let the teacher like do some stuff with confidence. And then at times that are appropriate, doing a little bit of like whisper redirecting, like that stuff works magically. And you don't have to have a ton of strong previous relationships to pull off stuff like that. Live coaching can be really awkward for folks, but it is actually way more effective than sitting down and doing a practice-based conversation where it feels a little bit harder. Like, I'm a big proponent for live coaching.
And some people actually do prefer it.
Yeah.
Some people will up front say, just I want to know, just tell me. Like, I want to know right now. Like,
Yeah.
what needs to change right this minute in the middle of my lesson? Some
And
people
those
that
are
can handle.
powerful debrief moments on the back end, right? If you say, hey, I asked you to give a consequence to Jose and you didn't, like now we've got a place for us to have conversations about your beliefs, right? It's a different source of evidence that allows you to expand on an action step and go to some thinking patterns as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, thank you so much for everything that you shared today. How can people keep learning from you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, so couple of places. The EduCoach by Dr. Joe Lane Substack is joelane.substack.com. It's spelled LEIN. I'm also on Instagram, EduCoach by Joe. I'm also on TikTok, I guess. I don't know, that's new to me. And pretty active on LinkedIn because I have the privilege and honor to recruit for my school district. So I'm just gonna, always be recruiting. So listen, if anyone wants to be a school leader, come talk to me because I got some places
You're looking
and
for some people.
I'm looking for some people. I'm looking
All
for,
right.
I think we're all looking for some people, right?
Right. Yes.
To
There's always.
come and join the fight, right? Like,
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. There's no, nothing more disheartening than going through a round of interviews and being like, well, I guess we have to either we're going out for more interviews or we're not. What's happening? Yeah. So that's good. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for everything you shared today. I'm sure people are going to look you up.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
So I love learning from Dr. Lane. I feel like she is like a font of information. She has so much research to support everything that she says. And I really enjoy her Instagram account. So you should probably check that out. There's all kinds of really great little bites of information that could then lead you to dig into her Substack and learn even more about what she's written about. So next week, we're going to continue our series on better conversations. We're going to talk about reflective questioning for teachers to have reflective conversations. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!